Just to begin with, this webinar is organized by OSU in cooperation with the Oklahoma Grains and Feed Association, Oklahoma Wheat Commission, and Oklahoma Wheat Growers. So thanks to everyone for the support. And just a brief overview of the wheat conditions, crop conditions that we are seeing in general. So basically, wheat had a slow start in the fall. We saw a lot of uneven stands and slow growth for forage production. But that actually came back through well in the spring with a lot of moisture we had. And so, except for some areas now that got hit by this late spring freeze event that harmed a lot of wheat in the southwest area, south central, and we'll hear more about the details and the extent of the freeze damage from the individual reports. But a lot of this freeze damage that we are seeing, it's the main issues that when it came, wheat was just right at flowering. And so a lot of the issues that we are seeing now, it's we have a lot of heads that are just sterile, that are not producing any grain. So drought is just starting to show now in some areas. We have some areas that were really dry, but I'm seeing a lot of leaf rolling and a lot of dry areas. And as far as diseases, Dr. Hunger, would you like to say a few words on what you're seeing?
Sure, I'll be glad to just give a little bit of a general overview of what's happened since last fall. And as Dr. De Silva mentioned, the effective planting date was quite a bit later this last fall because of drought and low prices and maybe a reduction in acres planted. But because of that later planting date, we didn't see any diseases through the fall and winter at all. Typically, especially in early planted wheat, we will, but this past year there were no diseases in the fall and through the winter. As we started moving out of winter and into the spring a little bit more, talking about late February, early March, a few diseases did start showing up, and particularly these were the leaf spotting diseases. Tan spot was in there, Septoria and Stagonospora, but by far and away the most predominant or prevalent of those was the Septoria. Which started being seen all across the state. But I have to mention that there's some other browning that's gone on this year that we haven't quite figured out, but it's not biotic related. It's not caused by a disease or a pathogen. It seems to be more related maybe to freeze and wind and some other environmental factors. But there's kind of a browning or bronzing of the leaves that isn't that. But there is a lot of Septoria. And that has moved up into the canopy quite a bit further than it typically does in Oklahoma. I've seen it especially on some of the more susceptible varieties on the leaf underneath the flag and even on the flag leaf sometimes. We did start seeing stripe rust and earlier in the year, Josh Anderson from the Noble Foundation reported it first back about early March, later February. Gary Strickland seen it across Southwest. I've rated it at a few places for Dr. Carver's plots. So stripe rust is around. Now it's starting to shut off because it's gotten warmer. So you're going from that pustule stage that has kind of the yellowish golden color to the tileal stage, which is the black stage, which means it's shutting down. But it did some harm in some fields. And then leaf rust is starting to follow in its place now on those varieties that don't have resistance to that and were not didn't have their canopy wiped out by stripe rust. So leaf rust is starting to build. It's kind of a typical year, I would think, for stripe rust and leaf rust with those two diseases. The other one that I would mention are the viruses. Because of that effective later planting date last fall, I didn't expect to see very many mite-transmitted virus disease samples. And we've only gotten maybe about six or eight in, and of those six or eight, only four or five have tested positive. There have been some positives for barley yellow dwarf because there have been some aphid infestations throughout the growing season. So we are getting some of that, and I can certainly see spots of barley yellow dwarf in my plots. But overall, it's somewhat a typical disease year except for the leaf spotters. And usually those stay down on that lower canopy and don't move up, but this year they certainly did. And I know a number of people have sprayed for them as well as for the rusts, and it's something that you need to be aware of. From here on out, for most of Oklahoma, except maybe in northwestern in the panhandle, it's probably getting a little too late to spray, because I think by far and away most of the wheat in the southern half of Oklahoma is past flowering. And that's pretty much a summary.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
I guess we just move on here. Yeah, so the tour here covers all areas of Oklahoma, so which is divided in 9 regions. So basically today we will have 9 different speakers representing their regions. So they will each present about their own report. So let's just thank all of them. So here we have a rich representative from each area. And as I said, you're just gonna hear from each of them. And I thank you for their work. They were just going around several fields this past week to provide us their best guesses on the estimates. So here, starting with Southeast region, Brian Freckin.
All right, thank you, Dr. Silva. So I am an area livestock specialist. We don't have an agronomist to necessarily assign like we did in the other ones. Brian Pugh does help out with a lot of agronomy questions. He probably should be the speaker for this area, but I'm just doing my part. And I would say acreages has been dropping since the last censuses, and the 2020, I would say we're probably down 70%+ of acreages being planted to wheat. So next slide. All right, so the Southeast overview, when I was looking at the year, I was thinking about how we started 2019, and I have a picture on the bottom right kind of as a little bit of a joke in the fact that I was in that area in early last May when the police came around and told us to get out. And so those were fertilizer barges that were on TV as being worried about hitting the dams. And so I was going to say that we tried to fertilize early there, but that's not the case. But it does lead into all the farmland that was down by that river bottom area that some of the issues they had to start from. So next slide. In Lane, Oklahoma, we have a demonstration site that I started some cool season varieties, and we did plant some Gallagher wheat there. And so, like I said, being a livestock specialist, I'm kind of interested in the growth pattern. And so I clipped that plot of Gallagher wheat monthly. And so it does show the overview that we did have some slow growth. And then all of a sudden in April, it took off. And we've actually cut that little plot for hay, just like all the other cool season varieties. But it was a good learning experience for me to learn a little bit more about a particular wheat variety. So you can see that from basically February, March, and April, we had some good growth there, but it was a little bit sporadic as well. So mm-hmm. Until April, where we saw really kind of a good demonstration site for this particular wheat. Next slide. McClure County, that's the one I'm most comfortable with. That's the one I live in. I also live in Ada part of the time too, but it's a hard red producing county, mostly done utilized for grazing and haying. And so this is one particular field I found in the bottoms on April 30th that I went out and tried to take some pictures. And as you can see, we've got quite a bit of weed pressure there, buttercup, feral rye. You know, the height of that weed is good, but there's definitely some weed pressure there. So next slide. Did get some reports from other ag agents. It wasn't just me going out. I rely on my ag educators to know what they've got going on in their counties. And so Leland McDaniel suggested that he only had about 300 acres in Carter County, and he did see some slight freeze damage. Next slide. McCurtain County, usually down there by the Red River, there's several places that they plant for grain only. They had plenty of moisture at planting. But what I've been told from the experts there is mainly most of the growers are going to use it for graze out there. They don't have plans on harvesting it. So, next slide. General comments. Majority wheat is being utilized for grazing. A little bit of late start on seeding conditions, being too wet to get in to do the planting. Harvest conditions don't look too promising as well. When I went up to that LaFleur one, it's definitely still pretty wet out there in the fields. So hopefully we're seeing a little change in the weather pattern here. All right, next slide. Final comments. The overall southeast crop looks decent considering planting conditions. I put my last statement in. We're kind of thankful to play in the mud again. It's kind of very similar to what it was last year. We seem to get a majority of the rain. Unfortunately, there's some drought in the west. We tend to get the most of it. And I think that may be next for the So here's our estimates. We're down considerably. Like I said, McCurtain County had somewhere close to that 2,000. But if they tell me they're going to just either graze it out or hay it, I've taken that off. So really, we've only got about 5,000 acres at about 35 bushels to the acre. So only 0.15 million bushel for southeast region.
Okay. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Okay, now we'll go for the Panhandle region with Daryl McBee.
Daryl, you're still muted. Okay, I think try it now. I think you may have hit mute on your headset. You're not muted in Zoom, but your headset may be muted.
Okay.
There we go.
Now you're coming through.
Now I'm coming through.
Yep.
Okay. Now I'll start over. Okay. Can everybody hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Well, at least I get a lot of miles on my vehicle when I go do the tour. I put about 360 miles on in that day and a half traveling out. But I agree with Amanda's opening comments that we got the weed in, at least Harper and Beaver, pretty good shape in the fall. But, you know, the growth was slow. People were complaining about only being able to turn a fourth or a fifth of the cattle in that they wanted to last fall. But then we had pretty good growing conditions up until lately. So next slide, please. All right. This is kind of one of my first stops, and this is around in the Forgan, Oklahoma area, which is typically a pretty good wheat producing area. And you can see from my probe that flag leaves look pretty good. I can tell you everywhere I stopped, it was fairly difficult to get the probe in far enough that it would stand up on its own, because that's kind of how our drought conditions are coming. But this counted out around 48 bushel per acre. You can see flag leaves haven't started to roll much, but it's not too far away. All right, next. This was just east of Hooker, Oklahoma. And I guess if I kind of had to draw a line on where the good wheat stops and the poor wheat starts, I would draw that right around Hooker, Oklahoma, or just a little bit east of it. And you can see from this picture, these flag leaves are already pretty much rolled up, mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, it's probably a foot tall, the wheat. It's pretty much headed out. And this counted out at 11, 11.5 bushels per acre. I saw a lot of fields that in this area that looked like that. Next slide. This one, you know, I'm not a Todd Johnson, as you can tell, because I am not a good photographer. But this is over east of Eva, Oklahoma, out kind of on the getting close to the Texas Cimarron County line. And you can tell this wheat is pretty much done for. It's got a bad color. It's been under drought stress for a long time. And it counted out, like I said, 5.5 bushel. This is, I don't know, a fourth of the fields or so look like this. The rest of them looked a little better. So just to give you an idea of kind of what they're facing out in that area. Okay, next slide. Okay, this is a test plot, and it's located east of Keys, a few miles out on Stewart's. And you can see I took a picture. Iba is on the right and bent left, and Bentley is on the right. You can see that's a 12-inch bucket on the probe, so the wheat's not much higher than that. It counts out about 14-15 bushel per acre. Some of these fields you can kind of see out there, it looks like it's pretty much headed out. When you're driving by some of these fields in Cimarron County that are this green, you think, well, there's pretty good wheat out there. But when you stop and walk out in it, they're very thin. They're hanging on. But I would like to say a lot of these fields, you know, have basically 1 foot in the grave and 1 foot on a banana peel. It's pretty much that critical out in the far west part of the panhandle. Next slide, please. Okay. Now I go back to the southern part of Beaver County, and this is the Balco variety test plot. And so the southern part of Beaver and Texas counties are wetter than the northern side. So this down in the Balco area, and they usually grow pretty good wheat. And you can see Gallagher's up pretty tall, Iba, and then to the right of Iba would be Bentley. So, you know, that's the Balco test plot's going to turn out pretty good if we can get some more moisture. Next slide, please. This is my pride and joy, the Buffalo variety test plot. And I took this a couple days ago. You see, you got Iba on the left and Bentley on the right. And looked pretty good. We're hanging in there. And you can tell off to the upper left-hand corner is the mesonet site. So if you ever want to know what the conditions at the Buffalo variety test plot are, you can tell pretty much to the second. Next slide, please. This was that same morning. It was kind of damp. Thought Mr. Hunger would enjoy this. There's a picture of the flag leaves on Iva at the Buffalo test plot. Now, you know, I'm not as trained scientist as he is, but I don't see much leaf disease problems on the upper part of our plants. Next, please. Okay, my final comments. I call a tale of two cities, or tale of four counties. Harper and Beaver County, at this point, have good potential. We're bordering on the edge of running out of moisture to finish this crop up. Flag leaves haven't started rolling that bad yet. A lot of it's kind of turning blue. Like I said, in Texas and Cimarron County, you know, it's bleak at best, because if we don't get significant moisture soon, in all four of these counties, we're going to start going backwards real fast, and our quality is going to deteriorate, in my opinion. The bright side is, though, in my travels, I really never saw any freeze damage that I could see. I didn't see, like, didn't see any disease problems on the upper part of the plant. Of course, you know, no moisture does work much for disease. So now we'll get on with what everybody's looking for is what I think things are going to make. Okay. Beaver County, I'm estimating 98,000 acres harvested. That's 60% of planted acres between the graze out and some that may be abandoned. So like I say, if we get significant moisture, there's potential out there for around 25, 28 bushel wheat. Cimarron County, 82,000. That's 50% of the planted acres in Cimarron County. Okay. The problem with Cimarron County right now is the wheat's not completely dead, so they can't really get off of it yet. It's not tall enough to hay. So if it gets moisture, they're going to raise a little bit of wheat. Plus, that includes the irrigated acres. There's a few of those in Cimarron County. So 16, I'm putting Cimarron. Harper, where I live, 93,000. That's 70%. I think most people are going to – I don't see a whole lot being grazed out because they got – it looks pretty good potential, and the prices had a little bump lately. So I'm going to go kind of our typical average of 26 bushel per acre. Texas County, 138,000. I'm putting out at 60, that's 60% of the planted acres. Just because there's quite a bit of, I saw a lot of circles of double crop wheat behind Milo corn stalks. So that's why I raised the yield a little bit to 19 to compensate for the 14, 15 bushel dry land wheat. So my total is 411,000, 22 bushel, 9.09 million. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Daryl. All right, so now we are going to move to North Central, the West region, so with the Greg Highfield.
Okay, yeah. Am I unmuted?
You're fine.
Thank you. Okay, well, Josh Bouchon took his name off my title slide here, but he toured with me, and Josh and I conducted counts and toured the four western counties of that north central region. And in addition, we surveyed several agribusiness leaders and, of course, the extension educators to get their feel for how those counties would yield. So we can move to the next slide. You know, just overall, we think that these crops are in excellent condition. I totally agree with Daryl. Our flag leaves are clean. We've had more moisture, so we've had some of that good tillering, and things look very good. Some areas, especially in Western Woods County and Northern Woodward County, are much like Harper County. As Daryl discussed, they could sure use rain. We've got cracks in the soils that we observed on the tour and stuff like that. So we do have areas that need some moisture, but overall, not too bad. Fall forage production was highly variable, and that variability is still visible. And the later maturing wheat is kind of rapidly catching up with the others. So again, we think this crop is in good condition, and really we're very hopeful for the future. So, okay, next slide. All right. This is a slide of the wheat plot at Cherokee. You can see some of the pictures there and just some of the general crop conditions. Again, we counted the wheat around that plot and it looked excellent. And so Josh added this slide. Josh, did you include that for any particular comments? I'll let Josh comment on that.
No, it just tied with your previous slide.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Josh. But okay, we can move to the next slide. So yes, again, wheat's in excellent condition. We did have We do have some conditions that Josh has certainly been looking into on some of the poor wheat that we have following cotton. Josh, any comments on that?
It started out great, excellent tiller production, and then this spring when they kept missing the rains out towards Cheyenne Valley and the western part of that, the region you're discussing, just ran out of moisture too quick.
I spoke with some other agribusiness people in Major County, and they mentioned the cotton issue as well. So it's obviously something that's a concern and across the entire county. So, okay, next slide. You know, that's not to say that we're not without our issues. We did have some scattered freeze damage across the area. Most of it was probably the head lodging and not coming out, but we have seen some white tillers. We've seen some other issues along with that, and we've certainly seen, for whatever reason, just a dab of smut in some of those fields. So, again, that's just some of the observations we made. But overall, it was very scattered and or what we feel to be just a minor yield reduction. So, okay, next slide. Well, again, for estimating the production for the West region, we expect it to be above average on a yield per acre basis. There are large areas of well-managed, high-quality fields that have a very high upside yield potential. And so between those plus the, just good quality wheat that we've got, we think the aggregate potential is very good for the West Central region. Now, attempting to estimate the harvested acres is really a challenge this year. As you can imagine, when the cattle market declined, many of the fields scheduled for harvest were diverted to graze out. Feedlots are full, and so those feeder cattle are still obviously on pasture. So really the final impact of those acres diverted to grazing is yet to be determined. And so we'll see how that remainder of the season plays out, but it had an impact. It may not be quite as severe as first indicated, but of course, in addition, we just started haying season and it's in full swing and we expect it to take out the normal number of acres that it would. So harvested acres is kind of variable, and we'll see how that variability plays out. So, okay, we'll move on to our estimates. Again, harvested acres was a little bit of a struggle. I kind of used a combination of FSA's grain-only numbers that they have in their system and modified that with the average surveyed information that the Oklahoma Ag Statistics put out. So that's kind of where some of those harvested acres numbers came from, and a little bit, like for example, in Woodward County, a high percentage of that county is probably grazed out, and so we adjusted that number down some. Again, you can see from the yields there, we're expecting an above average year, we've obviously got some excellent wheat out there, 60 plus bushel, and it's just a matter of how many of those come through and finish off with a good finish to the season. So you can see with the total there, I'm expecting a 20 million bushel production. So thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Okay, now we'll move on to the North Central East counties with Jeff Mitchell.
All right. Thank you. Like she said, I cover the North Central East region, Garfield, Grant, Kay, and Noble counties. We came up with more laid out ground in Grant Kay County than normal. A lot of late planted wheat following beans that we couldn't get the wheat planted in time. Did not tiller out well. Very minimal freeze damage in our areas and diseases. Most wheat was treated with fungicide in our areas. Next slide. Next one. Here's some of the problems we came up with. You can see on the left, there's some smut. We had some freeze damage there in the middle. We had a few fields with some leaf rust that were starting. That grower was going over that the same day we was counting. We're just now starting to flower in our area. So we still have the potential to do some more fungiciding. Next slide. Our final comments, like I said, there was not a lot of secondary tillers out here like we've had in the past. We do need some moisture and pretty quick. We're drying up. You can tell you're driving down the road that you know, heat stress, drought is really hurting us. But the overall average of all four counties, the wheat crop is just an average wheat crop. Harvest date, I estimate in our area to be June 5th. Next slide. Here's our estimates. Garfield County, about 230,000 acres. That's down about 10% because of some of the row crop. 38 bushel yield average, bringing in at 8.74 million. Grant County, 198,000. That's going to drop about 10%. 36 bushel average, 7.12 million. Kay County was 100,000. Acres, 33 bushel average, 3.3 million. Noble County was 78,000, again, 33 bushel, 2.57. A total of 606,000. Average bushels, 35.9. A total production of 21.73 million. A lot more corn has been planted in this area than we've had in the past. And we got a lot of beans and sesame going to be going in. So there's a lot of open ground. A lot of hay was cut. So our acres are going to be down a little bit compared to last year. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. So now we'll move on to the West Central region with Ron Wright.
Thank you, Dr. Silva. Next slide, please. This crop started off. We had some of the wheat got in early and it got big and looked pretty good through the winter, but a big portion of the wheat was in late due to lack of rainfall, and that wheat for the most part just kind of set all winter. The crop in the last 10 days has really started to falter here due to the lack of moisture. You can see this crop backing up almost on a daily basis as you watch it. Our disease pressure has been very light. Like Dr. Hunger talked about, we've seen quite a bit of environmental impact on some of the leaves. Price has continued to cause a kind of a lack of interest in wheat, but surprisingly, our acres have remained pretty static to what they were last year. Next slide, please. We're in hopes for a average to maybe above average harvest this year, but like we said, it is sliding at this point. Let's go on to our next slide. That's our acreages. Beckham County, 23,000, yield 25, about a little over half a million production. Custer County, 100,000 acres. We're looking at maybe 40 bushel crop average for about 4 million bushel. Dewey County, 125,000, yield of 30, 3.75 million bushel. Ellis County, 49,000. They're looking at 55 bushel. That's including some irrigated wheat, about 2.7 million bushel. Roger Mills County, 20,000 acres, 30 bushel yield, a little over half a million. Washtenaw County, 35,000, 32 yield, 1.1 million. Now, I might point out Roger Mills County and Washtenaw County, their harvested acres probably look different than what you would normally expect them to look at. They've had some significant freeze damage in those two counties, but their biggest issue was here in the last week, 10 days, they had a major hailstorm roll across those two counties and has just, for the most part, wiped quite a bit of that crop out in that area. We're talking baseball size hail. Total acreage of 352,000. Our average yield looking at about 36, maybe 12 million and three quarter, or not quite 13 million bushel. The next 10 days, I think, on that is going to maybe change if we don't get some rain pretty quick. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ron. So now we'll move to the central region with Grant Mason.
Thanks, Dr. Silva. So I went out with Avery Eads, who's done this for years, and we did our tour in central Oklahoma. Overall, the wheat looks pretty good considering no moisture in the last month or so. Next slide. A lot of the wheat got in late, just like sounds like the rest of the state did. There wasn't as much grazing as there normally is. Feral rye is still bad in many areas, but it seems to be better than last year. Obviously, we were seeing rye we've never seen before, all the moisture we had last year. In the eastern portion of the region, especially in Logan County, we're seeing bad ryegrass problems. You don't see near those issues the farther west you go. The ground's getting pretty hard. We're starting to see it crack out quite a bit. We need rain, but if you get below the surface, we still do have some moisture below the surface, but it needs rain pretty soon. Next slide. Fungicide and insecticide run, it finished up pretty well this last week. There's a few trickling in. We saw a lot of tan spot early on, rust. The aphids were bad this year, talking to quite a few of the pilots, and that they really seemed to think that there was an uptick in aphids years. And then a lot of throughout the entire region, more than I'm used to seeing. I don't think it's going to be make a huge impact on the yields, but we are seeing. Next slide. That's just a breakdown of the wheat varieties we're seeing in our area. Smith's Gold is up significantly. Gallagher's still the go-to variety in our area. Next. Final comments. Overall, we can expect to have a pretty good wheat crop this year. We saw some wheat that, you know, has potential to do mid-60s. If it rains, filling that third berry in some areas. The late freeze in our area didn't do near the damage that we kind of expected as late as it was. There is some damage throughout, but it's minimal. In the northern part of the region, we saw a little bit of hail damage, but kind of with the freeze, it's not detrimental. We will hopefully see some moisture, hopefully this week, it looks like. We saw no jackrabbits and no quail. And this is what our estimates are looking like. The Blaine County harvested acres are up a little bit from last year's estimates. But it's kind of tough to say because there are still some people that are rolling it into hay. Overall, the wheat looks pretty good, looking at about 39 bushel the acre. Canadian County, same deal. I think they've had just a touch more moisture. than the rest of the counties, and being around 42 bushel to the acre potential. Kingfisher County, looking at 37 bushel the acre. There in the northern part, there's potential for higher yielding crops than farther south. It's like Logan County, Oklahoma, and Payne. They're about what last year's estimates were. Oklahoma County continues to grow more houses than wheat. So I think that'll continue to go down. And then Payne County, I was talking to someone this morning, there was more swathers headed out to cut more of that. So I think you'll see those acres go down as well. So overall, looking at around 452,000 harvested acres and around 39 bushel yield, and then somewhere around 17.5 million bushels. Thanks.
Thank you, Grant. So we move to the Northeast region with Peyton Hayes.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Silva. I guess just to get started here, if you want to go on to the next slide, a few of our challenges to backtrack to last fall. You know, Brian mentioned it a little bit in the southeast corner with all the moisture they had. Same for us up here in the northeast corner. Just another wet year, tough getting any wheat in the ground. That's really our biggest contributor to, the lower acres the last couple of years. Fast forward this spring, we've had a few, late freezes here, scared us a little bit. And as we speak, last night we had another storm come through. Seems like we've had a storm about every week come through with some hail. Luckily for us so far, no major damage. And with that, obviously some heavy rainfall. So it seems like every year we have to deal with a couple of these, but the last couple of years it's been all four, if not more, challenges. So next slide, please. All right. So given those challenges, our condition, the wheat that's out there, it looks pretty good. Everything's headed out over the past 10 days or so. Again, no damage from those cooler temps we saw middle to late last month. And with the hail, another storm last night, again, had some hail, nothing real big, nothing bigger than, say, golf ball size. I'd say it's probably about the biggest I've seen. More than anything, we need some drier and warmer weather to help finish us out here. We're a little different than, some of those western areas of the state that are a lot more dry. We've had plenty of rain and definitely seeing some spots in the field, that don't drain as well. Some of those areas are struggling, and you can tell a difference. But other than that, I think, what's out there looks good. Next slide, please. Got just some pictures here. So it's pretty good wheat there, Mays County, if you want to kind of keep going. Wagner County as well. There's, what wheat's there looks pretty good. Next slide, I believe we're going to show, field here in Okmulgee County. So that's that field's gone, to some flooding there. We've got a little bit of that. I think the main question going forward for us is how much moisture we continue to get, whether we lose any more acres or whether, it drops our yield some because of the rain. So go ahead to the next slide. So as far as harvest, somewhere around the 10th, I think is when we'll start. As far as harvested acres, I would say similar to last year. That's probably, 2/3 of the normal year for us, or a decent year for us. Still probably 2/3 of that. And recall yields, closer to probably 45 bushel to the acre. And again, hopefully won't get any more moisture or too much of it to drop that yield down any. Go ahead to the next slide. I believe I'll show the estimate there. I've got several counties in the region, so didn't want to list out all of those. So here's just for the whole region. calling it 40,000 harvested acres at 45, you know, that might be, I think that's about right where we are now. Hopefully it stays there and puts us at 1.8 million.
All right. Thank you, Peyton. Now we'll move to the Southwest region with Gary Strickland.
Okay. Can you hear me okay, Amanda?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to share. You can go ahead and move to the next slide. We'll jump into some general comments. I apologize. This is a busy slide, but we'll try to make it through it fairly quick. As most everybody said, wheat was in a little bit later down here, but we did have some early planted acres that we were able to see a few late fall forage production areas in some of our Southwest areas, not too many, but some out there. The majority of our wheat acres, again, were in later, and they grew very slowly through the early winter time. We really didn't start to see good vegetative growth until probably mid-January, to early February. We started getting some rain in that time frame, not heavy rain, but it was fairly consistent and kept us moist, and the wheat really responded to that, and we developed good vegetative plant growth. And as that continued into early spring, we really saw the wheat shoot up in height out there and really responded in a short amount of time in our area out there, probably one of the tallest wheat crops we've seen in a long time. And up to the 1st of April, we probably had one of the best standing yield potential crops that I've seen in the Southwest. We saw dryland acres looking anywhere from 40 to 70 bushel potential yields out there, stressing again up to early April. Now, insect pressure, we were fairly light this year. I think all counties, we did see some bird cherry, old aphids, green bugs, some mites, again, noted across most of our counties, but the numbers didn't ever get too high. It's my impression for most everybody. Disease pressure was relatively light through the winter to early spring. However, as Dr. Unger mentioned, in mid to late March, we received heavy pressure from tan spots, septoria leaf blotch, and stagnosporia blotch was seen. These leaf spot diseases typically don't move up on the plant, but last year and this year in Southwest Oklahoma, they definitely have, and we had to respond heavily this year with fungicide. There was a lot of acres sprayed with fungicide in a large degree in response to these leaf spot diseases. So we tried to time those fungicide sprays as late as possible because we were also afraid of the rust moving in, and certainly we did get a late April infestation of stripe rust down here that moved in. It's been fairly short-lived with our temperatures climbing as high as they have. For instance, this past weekend, we were anywhere from 102 to 105 degrees down here. The stripe rust is coming to a quick end for us down here, but we did see it move in and hit the plants fairly significantly. Of course, as everybody's talked about, April freeze has significantly impacted most of our Southwest wheat acres. No question about that. Fields that remain for grain production estimates, as I drove around and looked, had some level of freeze damage, and it just ranged. It depended on where you're at. Anywhere from 5% to as high as 80% out there in the field. We, again, were hit fairly significantly with this, which will be reflected in the later table I've got. In relationship to that, in just about all of our counties, our hay and graze out acres have gone up dramatically from what was originally thought would happen at the beginning of this year. You can move on. Next slide. Grassy weed pressure still significant this year. We saw rescue grass in about all of our counties down here. Probably not quite as heavy pressure from that, but it was still there consistently across most of our counties. Followed by cheap, downy, and Japanese bromes. It's been a few years since I've seen all three of these brome species out there, but we saw Japanese brome present in just about all the counties at some level. Wild oats were definitely present this year, maybe at an increased pressure this year than what we saw in, last year. And I did note some Italian ryegrass, which typically in Southwest, we don't see that too much, but did note some Italian ryegrass in Cotton County in a few of our fields there. Broadleaf pressure came on late, lots of tansy, pepperweed, bushy wallflower. Didn't see a lot of marestail this year. Last year, we dealt with it in heavy numbers. This year hasn't been very bad in terms of marestail late in our wheat fields. again, relationship to the high yield potential that existed during this time frame when we were spraying, a lot of producers chose to spray and control and address weeds this year. Okay, next slide. Just some pictures on the left. You see a picture of Septoria. See the necrotic tissue area there with the black spores in them, very characteristic Septoria. In the middle, you see tan spot, that necrotic spot developing in the center, that kind of yellow halo around it. And then if you look on the far right there, you see a picture on the flag leaf of some stripe rust that was developed. Next slide. Okay, on the far left, just a picture of a good field. Just about all of our fields had some slight on damage from freeze. But in this field, the floral parts were all still in good shape, good yield potential in this field. Again, some slight freeze damage in it, probably no more than greater than 5% good yield potential remaining in that field. Go to the middle pictures. You see that top picture, a white, kind of a white cast across that field, lots of on damage out there. On it, when we went in to check the flower parts and look at that, what we saw, of course, anthers were gone, but we also saw that the ovaries had also shriveled up and dried up, and this one had heavy damage out there. The one unique thing with this freeze this year was, in my opinion, a very slow developing freeze in terms of symptoms in our area. I made a comment to somebody, those are the greenest dead heads I've ever seen in the field. Head colors has stayed green, just over this past 5 days, really started changing out a lot more, maybe 5 to 7 days, in terms of seeing that whitish appearance, light green to bleached out appearance you might see with freeze damage. But there was no question that we were not developing grain kernels in these heads. And then on the left side, we had a streak through our county. It's a pretty narrow band, but they got some hail damage. But where it hit, it was devastating. This field is showing 80%+ hail damage than what was remaining out there. The freeze kind of took care of. Next slide. Estimation process. The only thing I'll say here, I put this up every year just to show you what I do, but, you know, mainly is that acre and yield estimates are always a moving target at these presentations. So this is going to be my best educated guess with what we were working with this year. Next slide. Our acre estimates, when I look at FSA numbers this year, were on average down about 18% across the Southwest counties. Fields being taken to harvest have also been reduced in my estimates on a percentage basis related to an increase in graze out or hay acres, which are noted by actual counts as I went through counties. You'll see that in the next slide. Our bushel per acre estimates reflect a county freeze damage percent reduction. That'll be on my final slide. Given our current soil moisture conditions, and I may want to take this back and change it probably pretty quickly, but coupled with the wheat development stage and a reduced yield potential out there now after the freeze, I believe we stand a chance at maintaining our current yield potential, barring any further weather crisis like the past 4 days where we've had 102 to 105 degrees temperatures. In that case, I wouldn't say that. A good rain would help us a great deal to finish out, but the past 4 to 5 days have been pretty devastating on us down here too. But we're hanging in there again because we don't have near the yield potential we were supporting. Okay, Amanda, next slide. Okay, region estimates, FSA reported percentage decrease of planted acres that are just going to go for forage use in our county. Cross counties, I won't cover all those numbers. What I really want to point out this, if you look at the percentage decrease of planted acres for forage use, is by my accounts, as I went across counties, they're double or triple what originally was reported to the FSA office. So it's really changed dramatically after our freeze incidents down here. Next slide. And here's my final slide. Again, my potential harvested acres, the acres per county have been reduced on those forage use acres dramatically. I would say that I really still question cotton, Kiowa, and Tillman to a degree, that those acres may still go down in those counties. Jackson may to a degree yet more. We may see more acres go out. If not for hay or grazing, they may just take them out for other reasons. So those acres may be a little high. The yield bushel estimates per county reflect that percentage freeze damage average estimate per county there. On that. So when you take that in consideration, our total acres for harvested acres are a little over 462,000. with an average of 22.3 bushels per acre. It should have been a lot better minus this freeze. My average would have been up probably in the 40s this year. Again, it was just devastating to see the impact of what the freeze did in some of our counties. Total production out there is about 10.3 million with it. And with that, Amanda, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you, Gary. Okay, so now we move to our last region here, South Central, with Heath Sanders.
Thanks, Amanda. Good points on what Gary is seeing, and it's kind of the same thing of what I'm seeing. I was able to get out last week and make a track and cover all these counties. And it was kind of interesting to me as I traveled kind of from in Caddo County, as the further north I went, I didn't see near the freeze damage as what I was finding further south. So as I got up around Hydro, Hinton, that wheat looked a lot better to me. It was flowering. Grain heads were filling. We had a quarter to a half to three quarter berry in some. And the overall plant health looked really good. As I went further, as I went east into Grady County and up around Tuttle, Minco, Tuttle, if the wheat was planted later, it seemed to be a little better. The further south out of Tuttle I went, as I got closer to Amber, things drastically changed, where I started seeing a lot more freeze damage out there. So it's the further, a little bit further north you go, it wasn't quite near as bad as what we are seeing down here in the further southern county. But these are the seven that I was able that I covered. Go ahead and advance that, Amanda. So just some general comments about the growing season. Pretty dry October. Normally when, you know, we try to shoot for planting wheat in October for grain, we were drier. We didn't get the forage that we typically would get during that time frame, or that accumulation of forage time into October and November. So forage was for grazing was limited. Overall, we had a pretty mild winter, and we had some moisture that allowed the wheat to grow through the winter, especially kind of that end of December, January, February time frame, where the wheat really grew more than we would typically see due to that mild winter. This wheat and what I have looked at had extremely good yield potential. And I'll put had there, given with freeze event and then also some of the hailstorms and things that we've been receiving on there. And we're going to talk just a little bit more about that. Go ahead. So insect pressure, we did see quite a bit. I say quite a bit more army cutworms this past, early, late winter, early spring. There were a few bird cherry oat aphids, but have been pretty light for the most part. Disease pressure, Septoria tan spot really was making its way up through the canopy and was really showing up. Did find some powdery mildew and some stripe rust, but it's been pretty light. There's one thing that keeps popping up and a lot of people are talking about it is the loose smut. And I didn't put that on here, but I've seen a lot of fields this year with loose smut. It's probably some of the kind of the worst I've seen in quite a while. So I'm not for sure why that's the case, but finding a lot of loose smut this year in a lot of fields. Weed pressure, as always, is an issue. Italian ryegrass, in around the 81 corridor, feral rye, you get into Caddo County is pretty bad, which is always an issue. Rescue grass, seeing quite a bit more rescue grass this year, and also bromes, and then some wild oats. But Italian ryegrass is one of those that in some areas it's pretty tough. Go ahead. So just some comments on the April 15th freeze frost event. severe in some fields. A lot of damage is showing up, and it just keeps showing up, especially with the elevated temperatures that we've been having over the last few days. I've got a picture up here of the hours below freezing that morning, and that shows 48 hours below freezing. But I snapped that morning just to have it on hand to look at that and kind of look at our low temperatures and how many hours we were below. To me, we didn't have a whole lot of hours but is causing a lot of damage. And I believe that goes back to the growth stage of the plant and just kind of where it was at, being that pollination is the most sensitive on a wheat plant. And that's just kind of where it was, where a lot of acres were at. This has been a very unique freeze event. I've never quite seen one like this one. Over the years that I've worked with canola and wheat, this one here is very unique as far as the amount of damage I'm seeing and just really no grain feel in some of these heads. Timing, obviously, is heading and pollinating. I couldn't find much damage after 7 days. We always say we need to wait 7 days, 10 days to go out and look at wheat fields. About day nine, day 10, I started to see what I thought I was seeing in some of it. But it was hard to see, confusion on the flower parts and kind of trying to figure out exactly what we were seeing. It wasn't showing up due to our temperatures following the freeze where it were really cool. So earlier planted wheat was hit harder than the later planted wheat, which seems to be okay. If the wheat was in the boot, we seem to have escaped it. Now, there may be some damage showing up, but nothing like what we were seeing at heading. Gary mentioned it, those green heads out there, and you think, my goodness, this is really good wheat. And you go out there and you really start looking, and the heads, there's no grain fill in them. And so a lot of variability within the field, low and high areas. The higher areas seem to not have as much damage as the lower areas. And so you have that mix out there in the fields. Go ahead and next slide. So here's a picture of some freeze damage. Actually, I mean, this was a uniform field. And it was, I'd been watching it. It had been heading. And then it just basically kind of froze it in time. You can see the berries shriveling up there. And the heads still are kind of green. Some things that are really concerning to me and what I'm seeing is this wheat is beginning to turn, and it shouldn't be. And the reason that it's beginning to turn is because that head is dying. And so when we see wheat fields out across and they're beginning to turn, that's a concern because we didn't really have that period where that head was really pretty and green and grain fill occurred. Next slide, please. So freeze damage again, over here on the right, you can see the mix of heads there. Even some of the greener heads that I'm finding are not filling grain. The wider ones, you can kind of use that pale yellow out there, and you can kind of look and see, and there's really no grain in those. A few of the greener ones, there might be a berry here or there, maybe a top berry, but still just I'm finding quite a bit of damage. And then on the left, a tremendous amount of wheat hay is being swathed. We've got farmers that are leaving strips out in fields. And it's, especially when you get down into southern Comanche County, there's also a lot in Grady County and also southern Caddo County where a lot of wheat hay is being swathed. You think from the road that wheat should be okay. It looks good. You get out there and you're finding those heads that just there's not really any grain in them. So next slide. So some final comments. As I said, a lot of wheat hay is being cut. It's been very challenging to determine this percent of freeze damage. Heads with no partial to to partial filling at the top or bottom, and vice versa. You'll walk into a field and the top's filled a little bit and the bottom's not, and it's flipped in the next field. And then some heads will only have two grains in them. So it's been very hard to determine a percentage of freeze damage with how much grain has actually been filled in the heads. And so I've seen from, you know, probably less than five up to almost, I'd say 100%. It was hard for me to even find a good head in fields. But we need to continue to look for grain fields, especially those later planted fields. Each field is different. We've got a lot of different scenarios out here. I will say we've got quite a few disappointed growers, and it's as good as some of this wheat looked. It was probably some of the best looking wheat I'd seen in a long time, and we were taking care of it and really trying to protect the yield because it was so promising. And some of the situations and things that we're seeing now, it's pretty disheartening. So how many acres will be left to harvest? What is some of this wheat going to make? Like I said, it's been very challenging to figure this out. There's still a lot of things that can go, that can happen from now to harvest. And so my best estimate or guess, next slide. So, and I kind of wonder if these harvested acres may be even lowered and maybe some of the yields, but Caddo County, I've got it 68,000 acres at 29, Comanche County, 15,000 at 24, Grady County at 18,000 at 26 bushel. Garvin County had really good wheat, and there's been a lot of wheat hay harvested or cut down in that county. McLean County, 1,500 acres. Stevens County, 3,500 acres. And then over at the bushels per acre, you can kind of ranges from 24 to 29. So a total of 109,000 acres, 27.5 bushel, just to tick over 3 million bushel. And the bushel per acre, the yield may still be a little too high. And that's what I have.
All right. Thank you, Heath. So I guess that's all we had from all the speakers. Thank you for the very complete reports. So it does look like that we'll be harvesting a little bit under 3 million acres with an average yield of 33 bushels an acre across the state, and the total production a little bit under 100 million bushels, so 96.5. And so I understand how difficult it is to do the estimates with all this freeze damage that with a very unique characteristics like Heath and Gary mentioned, very unique characteristics of this freeze damage. And I think everyone did a great job. We just need some moisture in most of the state so that crop can finish up well. And I know one of the things that you all have done in the past is that the audience would go ahead and do their own estimates. So what we did for this online version, we put up a survey at the end. So when you leave the webinar, when we end up the session, there will be a survey asking for your estimates for harvested acres, yields, and total production. So if you all could go ahead and fill out that survey, I can share with all of you the results later on. And with that, I just want to thank everybody, and I will open for questions if we have any.
Dr. Silva?
Yes.
Let's see. We've got a few questions here, and a lot of them have to deal with loose smut. And I was wondering if Dr. Hunger may have comments on that. Some of the questions related to, is there a reason that maybe loose smut would be worse in one variety as opposed to the other? Are there differences in varietal reaction? And then just maybe general comments on what we should do with the wheat that's infected with loose smut.
Yes, I'll be glad to address that. I saw some of the questions just now and was typing some answers to them, but got to remember that there's two smuts or bunts that can occur in Oklahoma that we've had. One is loose smut, which all of you are, I think four of the nine of you mentioned as having seen. And then the other one is common bunt or stinking smut. And I've not seen common bunt for quite a while. The difference between these two is that common bunt, the stinking smut, the spores of that fungus can carry over on existing seed, on the seed coat. And the key word there is on, not in. And then it can also survive, those spores can survive in the soil. And then when the seed germinates, that's when the spores germinate and you get infection and it moves with the plant and then comes out with bunt balls or bunted kernels. That's common bunt or stinking smut. Loose smut is different in that it actually infects the seed when it's pollinated. When the when the ovary is pollinated, that's when the loose smut gets in there from spores coming into that flowering head. So it actually is contained inside of the seed and then stays in that seed, and you can't really detect it during that time period. And then when that seed is planted the next fall and germinates, that seedling is infected and the fungus will grow with it. And then when the head comes out, instead of having a fertile head that's ready to pollinate, you have the loose smutted head that many of you had pictures of. So there's a big difference between those in terms of how their disease cycle. At one time, both of these were pretty high priorities on breeders' lists for looking for resistance. But as I know some of you have heard me give in presentations, the advent of the seed treatments, especially the systemic seed treatments, are very highly effective at controlling both of these, and especially the loose smut. So I would say that the increase in a lot of this is because we just don't treat enough of our seed anymore. I think growers are saving seed. And if you have just a couple heads in there, think of how many spores are being blown around when that weed is flowering and fertilizing. Because those loose smutted heads tend to come out just a little bit before the real act of pollination, of flowering, gets going. So you get a lot of increase in terms of that infected seed. Now, if that infected seed is just sent to the mill, it doesn't really have any effect on it. But if it's saved for seed and then planted and not treated, then you're going to have a exponential increase in terms of infected loose smutted plants, and it's just going to continue to blow up. So, there's apparently this, if this caught like four out of the nine presentations, and maybe even a few more than that, there's definitely a need to emphasize about either don't save your seed, especially if you had seen loose smut in it, or if you do save seed, go ahead and treat it with a fungicide that will address the smuts and bunts. And there's an abundance of those, really most any of them will do that. The other aspect of this that's important to remember is that there really is not, it's not been followed anymore about variety differences to loose smut. Like I say, it was a priority at one time, but it hasn't been since really the early 1970s, or at least the mid 1970s. So loose smut is something to watch for, and apparently there's quite a bit of it around this year. The other thing I would tell you, if you are advising growers with this, if they treat their seed and plant it in a field that had loose smut in it, and they come up the next year saying that, well, I've still got loose smutted plants in there, that's not from the treated seed, at least not if they did a good job with the treated seed. But there could have been plants that seed fell onto the ground and basically end up being a volunteer plant that came from infected seed. So it is possible to get that in the same field year after year. And again, that'll increase. But seed treatments are very highly effective against the bunts and smuts. And I'll be definitely be putting out some more information about those. Oh, especially next planting season.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Hunger.
Yep.
Dr. Edwards?
Let's see. Maybe Mike Schulte or someone, if Mike's still on here, could answer. There was a question about how the 2.9 million acres compares with historical data.
Okay.
I don't have that at that information at hand on the tip of my tongue here. Mike, any comments on that?
With the numbers that were given today, we would consider this an average wheat crop over the last 10-year average. I was going over the numbers with Ron Hayes last week, and over the last 10 years, in 2012, we came in with the highest wheat harvest we had over that period at 154 million bushels. And then in 2014, we had one of the worst wheat crops we had in all history at 47.6 million. And you take that over the 10-year averages, we're looking at around 101 million bushels for the 10-year average. So we'll be right on par with the 10-year average.
Okay.
Let's see, Dr. Silva, we had a request about the total bushels again. Would you mind just going back one slide? Okay. And then this question would be for Daryl. There was one question about the number of grains per head that he used as an estimate, and the answer was 20 in the panhandle. And there's a question, when do you think we will see combines rolling in the Oklahoma panhandle?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot to say, I would consider the crop ahead of schedule from what I normally see out there. Usually when to get to Cimarron County, I don't see heads out at all. And I think due to being stressed with the drought, and actually we don't think it, but the pretty warm winter, to me, the crop is ahead of schedule. You know, I'm looking at, unless we get significant rainfall, the 10th of June to the 15th, which is early for them, which is bad for having it recover if it starts raining. It's about past that point of a rain doing a whole lot of good to the wheat crop, because a lot of times the Cimarron can't have to get the rains later. It'll tiller on out and recover, but I just don't see much of a recovery this year.
So we will have, we are not going to have the in-person Lahoma field day. So what we'll do, the speakers, we'll go there and record it live. So we'll have a live streamed on Facebook. I have sent out emails, so let me know if you need more information about that. And each speaker will talk for about 20, 25 minutes. So you all be able to interact with us as we are out there in the field talking in front of the plots, and you'll be able to watch it from your home. So join us on Friday starting at 8:30. So I start at 8:30, and then we have a lineup of speakers until noon.